Welcome to How to... All right, here we go. Ready. Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today, we're answering your listener questions.
Joel, are you you feeling a little rough? I feel like your voice sounds a little textured,
a little gravelly.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe, I don't know, my daughter's been sick, so maybe it's rubbing off.
I was going to say, so you and I, our lives are quite intertwined and our girls play together all the time. And yeah, you've got a sick daughter. Two of my girls have had fevers as well. And I woke up this morning with my throat feeling a little sore. I got my fingers crossed that we're going to be okay, but yeah, Kate and I aren't excited for that other shoe to drop, if you know what I'm saying.
I know, man. The sickness, it just kind of runs around the school and then runs around our families and like the families of our neighbors and each other and stuff like that. And so, yeah, it gets...
It's better to get it over with. Give it a couple weeks. We'll all get healthy. We'll survive. But listener questions, man, we've got some good ones today. We have a listener asking for the best way to accept rent. He's going to be a new landlord, it sounds like. We've got a follow-up question for Roth IRAs. And we're going to start things off at the beginning of this episode talking about some different apps that you can use to sort of help create, maybe kickstart a side hustle. And even if that makes sense to do at all. So excited to get to those and a couple others with you today, man.
Yeah, it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Speaking of apps, you told me that your buddy Ben downloaded Acorns and he's been like kicking butt with it, right?
Yeah, you know Ben.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so let me tell you the full story, which was I invited him to Atlanta to hang for an Atlanta United match, actually, a couple weeks ago. And he said he couldn't because the next week he was going to be flying out to Ireland with a bunch of his buddies to play golf, which caught me way off guard because that's like the fanciest thing I've ever heard him say. It's very upper crust, you know, guys only. And so my follow-up question was, you know, when did you start taking trips like this, man? And he said it was a funny story in how a couple of years ago he proposed this idea, this trip to his wife. And it was just so far in advance that I think she just sort of knee-jerked agreed to it, right? She's like, sure, that's never going to happen, but let's do it.
That's the unicorn trip.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Isn't going to materialize.
But what they did was he set up an Acorns account and basically started saving for that trip without them even realizing it, right? Without them even feeling that they're setting that money aside. And
which is the cool thing about Acorns, because it just rounds up every purchase that you make and saves that money. And so, yeah, a lot of people like Acorns because it's easy to use and it's like this forced method of savings that you might not otherwise save if it wasn't for Acorns, right?
Yeah, it's easy to use, but it's like almost pain-free as well because you just slowly absorb it. You know, you have all the different purchases that you have through the month. It rounds it up. You don't really realize that money is getting set aside. And sure enough, two years later, all the guys had saved up their money and Ben's wife was pretty pissed because she couldn't believe, I guess, that they actually, you know, went through with it and got the tickets and everything. But they saved around $3,400 for this trip to cover airfare. I don't know if you've heard, golf is not cheap. I think in Ireland in particular, it's also maybe a little more expensive. I don't know.
They've got a lot of nice courses over there. Yeah.
Isn't that where golf started? Or is that Scotland?
Yeah, Scotland, I think.
Scotland, yeah. But Ireland, I mean, it's close enough, right? But anyway, this is a little success story for Acorns because typically you think, or at least I think, okay, Acorns a little bit here and there, like how much are you actually going to be able to set aside? But man, I'm totally impressed with the amount that he was able to set aside. He had set a clear goal and he achieved it. He totally rocked it. So Ben, kudos to you. And yeah. I would recommend to folks out there, if you're looking for an easy way to save like that, specifically for a very clear identifiable goal, man, check out Acorns.
Yeah, Acorns is cool, man. And congrats to Ben on making that happen and on saving that much money in order to be able to take a really cool trip like this. All right, by the way, we have a really cool beer that we're drinking on the show today, Matt. This is called Form to Table by Form Fermentary and Blendery. And so, yeah, that's a fancy way of saying that these guys brew beer and then they let it ferment and they blend beers together, which honestly is kind of like an art to mix different barrels of beer together to create a really good finished product in the bottle. So I'm really excited to try this beer out today.
Yeah, Joel, this beer was sent to us from Adam. He is there in Philly and that's where these guys are. And he's a big craft beer fan and reached out to us via Instagram. And so, yeah, big thanks to Adam. Thanks for sending this our way.
I just want to quickly say we have the best listeners. And how many good beers have we had?
Yes.
Because listeners have been so kind to send us beers. And so yeah, we always give a shout out and we're just incredibly thankful to get to try these beers that we wouldn't otherwise get to try. So thank you, Adam, for sending this beer over.
And real quick, I'll say I looked up on their website. This was the first beer that they released, this brewery, this specific bottle right here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, isn't that impressive?
That's really cool.
Yeah, these guys are super small and are relatively new. So yeah, looking forward to chatting more later on.
All right, Matt, so let's get to some listener questions today. And for folks out there wondering how they can submit a question to be considered to go on the show, they can go to howtomoney.com/ask. And there are directions there for how to submit a voicemail question. And let's take our first one right now.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. My wife and I love your show. We've learned a lot from you about not just how to money, but why to money. My question today deals with side hustles. My time's pretty limited, and so I've been exploring opportunities to make money off of things I already do or could do with a small time commitment. For example, you both clearly love biking, and Matt, sounds like you run a good bit. I do too. Have y'all tried any of the apps that claim they'll pay you to exercise? It seems like a nice way to earn a little extra cash for staying fit, but I also wonder if their small payouts are worth the time. I'd love to know your experiences with those apps, grocery reward apps, or anything else like that. Thanks so much, and keep up the great work.
Andrew, thanks so much, man, for sending that question in. I'm going to go ahead and just jump to it and say that I think most folks are not going to be making serious money using some of those different apps. You know, if you consider your hourly rates, I think you might quickly realize that it's just not worth it. Unless, like you said, you are already doing that activity. If there's something that you can pair with what you are already doing and it really doesn't take any time, some of those apps, like those fitness apps that you mentioned when you're running, you know, that can be a great way to maybe make some extra money. You mentioned, you know, how we talk about the why, not just how to money, but why. And I think that's a great consideration here is because just because you can make some extra money with some of these apps doesn't necessarily mean that you should. So taking into account how much time you would actually spend doing these different activities, you know, to make a few bucks, that's a serious consideration before I would consider going in on any of these apps.
Yeah, Matt, I haven't really experimented with many of these apps and it's purely for that reason. I don't feel like the payback I'm going to get is equal to the required bandwidth and time that I have to put forth in order to make money from these apps. But we should mention a couple that might be helpful. And in particular, the ones that can give you the greatest payback, I think, are the grocery apps. And so there are two in particular that I would say are worth trying. There's Ibotta and there's Fetch.
Well, I've never said Ibotta out loud. In my mind, I've always read it as like Ibotta. Or something like that.
It's Ibotta, right?
Yeah, but it makes sense. You said Ibotta. Yeah. And I immediately got it because I've never said the stupid app out loud.
You just read it.
Yeah, it makes so much sense now. But
my friend Michael, he is a single dude and he makes over $500 a year using Ibotta. And so it's this app where you take a picture of your receipts from the grocery store and you get money back just for taking those receipts and submitting them. And Fetch is very similar. And those are the two that, from everything I've heard and read and experienced, that give you the highest payback for the littlest effort. And I think that's kind of what you're looking for when it comes to some of these apps. So yeah, make sure to check those two out.
And then Andrew, you mentioned that you're a runner. In regards to some of those different fitness apps, Achievement is the most popular and legitimate one out there that I could find doing my research. And I actually downloaded that myself, gave it a shot. You get points for tracking your activity. You get extra points if you take surveys and different things like that. I didn't participate in any of those surveys because I wanted to see how many points I would get just by having this app essentially running in the background. And once you earn those points, though, you can redeem those for cash. Once you get 10,000 points, you get 10 bucks. And I'll go ahead and say that it's hard to earn that many points. The cool thing about Achievement is that it imported my activity from Runkeeper for the past month. And this past month has actually been pretty light when it comes to running. I've only run like once a week, so like four times, which is not much. But that being said, I got 1,000 points, which is a dollar, equivalent to a dollar. So if I was running like I normally do, which is, you know, three times a week, that can easily translate to 3,000 points, which is about $3. So yeah, I mean, it's real money. It's not going to make you rich. But again, you know, I was looking for a way to have an app running in the background that requires zero effort for me. Because Joel, like you, I'm not willing to take on an additional sort of side gig via an app like this to make a few bucks. Although I am totally cool with it, though, if it's super easy like that and I don't have to give it any time at all.
Yeah, so another one that that Andrew might want to consider is, it's called Sweatcoin, and you're not earning cash. You're earning actually like sweat coins, like digital currency, but you can redeem those sweat coins inside the Sweatcoin app to buy physical products. And so that's kind of an interesting one. It's doing kind of, Matt, what you said. It is running in the background, and it's documenting your exercise and giving you sweat coins based on how much exercise you're performing. Although one caveat to the app is that it doesn't work indoors. So if you're running on a treadmill or doing push-ups, you know, inside your house, it's not going to count. It's only going to count those miles that you walk or run outside of the house.
Yeah, that one was a little more confusing as far as how you can redeem those for actual currency. It was kind of cool. Like, it was a slick app. It kind of felt like a game. Like little virtual reality thing going on there. It's hard to describe, but you'll see if you check it out. But I could not figure out like what the exchange rate was. So that's one thing I didn't like about Sweatcoin specifically.
I feel like overall these things are just kind of a little bit gimmicky.
Yeah.
And there are ways that you could maybe make some extra money. But Andrew used the phrase side hustle. And you know, we talked about that on a previous episode. I think this is not something you want to consider a side hustle. If you want to take the way you work out or the way you exercise and turn that into some sort of side hustle, in my mind, that means starting something, you know, at 5 a.m. Monday through Friday, helping other people figure out how to exercise well. That is a way to get exercise yourself and then actually be able to make real money from it, to turn it into a legitimate side hustle.
Yeah, like some run coaching or something like that. He runs all the time. Like, how can I tie this into a business that is something that he can scale and bring on clients? And yeah, I'm with you, Joel.
Yeah, so that's something like meaningful, whereas a lot of the things we're mentioning here are going to be just smaller rewards.
So Andrew, in the end, right, if you are okay trading some of your information, your privacy, you know, some of your battery life on your phone, because it's going to use a little more battery juice in the, you know, as it's running in the background, if you're okay trading some of that for a few bucks, then I think it's worth it, right? Like, you know, every few months I might be able to make a few bucks here and there. Nice little surprise, a little bit of extra beer money. But, you know, unless I'm making actual big money, I'm not willing to devote additional time towards it, right? Like, I talk often about the credit card sign-up bonuses. Like, you're making between $300 and $800 just for using a credit card. Like, that is something I do anyways. I just put it on a different card. To me, that feels like a little more substantial. And it's sort of this little side hobby thing I can do. I get all nerdy with it. But really, it's bonus money. It's not what we would consider a side hustle. So make sure that you're considering how much time that you would be dedicating towards these side hustles and that you're not getting distracted from creating something even bigger and scalable.
All right, Matt, we got lots more good listener questions coming up. In just a second, we're going to take a question from a teacher who's trying to help his students learn how to handle their money well before they graduate.
Those youngins. All right, Joel, like you said, we're going to have our question here from our teacher friend. But first, we're going to hear from a listener who had a question about Roth IRAs.
Hey guys, this is Shannon from Texas. I just had a quick question for y'all about Roth IRAs after finishing the podcast. So I've heard mixed reviews about getting multiple Roth IRAs. I've heard from some people it can maybe be a good idea to have two different Roth IRAs just to kind of diversify your investments, but I didn't really know if that was the best decision or if it came with extra fees or if it was just kind of too complex. So I just wanted to get y'all's opinion on that. Thanks.
Shannon, great question. And actually, the last thing you said is the reason not to have multiple IRAs. It's too complex. Having multiple Roth IRA accounts is kind of like having multiple checking accounts. I actually do have multiple checking accounts.
Yeah, you can do that, but
right.
Do you need to?
Or multiple savings accounts, I guess, not multiple checking accounts.
Right.
But yeah, it can complicate life a little more than it needs to. And there is a chance that you're paying higher fees depending on where your Roth IRAs are located. You can technically have a Roth IRA with, you know, multiple different companies, but really consolidating your Roth IRAs and having them with only one institution is just going to make life easier on you when it comes to putting more money into those Roth IRAs every year with a cap of $6,000. And it's also going to potentially make it easier for your beneficiaries. There's just all these other hassles that come along with having multiple Roth IRAs at different institutions.
Yeah, Joel, you mentioned that $6,000 cap, and that is the combined total of all your Roths. So, right, you can have six different Roth IRA accounts opened, and you could put $1,000 in each of them. But Shannon, you mentioned diversification. There's no diversification happening there just because you have them in separate accounts. That actual diversification is happening with the money that you place within your Roth IRAs. You want to use that money to buy those index funds, which are made up of hundreds and thousands of different companies. And so if you're referring to diversification from the standpoint of, okay, I have my Roth account with this company, like let's just say Vanguard, doesn't it make sense to diversify and also have a Roth IRA with a different company, say Fidelity? Well, there's really no risk in having all of your money with a single account there, right? Vanguard, in this case, in this example, they're just a custodian of that account, and there's virtually zero risk of having all of your Roth IRA money with that single company.
All right. So, Matt, you mentioned Vanguard and Fidelity. A couple other great options are Charles Schwab and M1 Finance. So, Shannon, if your Roth IRA is open with one of those companies, we would suggest just staying put there and not opening up an account at another institution. Really, that's just going to overcomplicate things, and it's unnecessary.
All right, Joel, let's go ahead now and take that next question.
Hi, my name is Greg, and I'm a high school math teacher in Northwest Ohio. I teach a financial algebra class, and since I created it, I've kind of turned it into a personal finance class with the goal of getting my students as prepared as possible for post-high school life. I've tried to cover a variety of topics, such as credit cards, mortgages, saving for retirement, and currently we're starting to read The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey, which I feel like does a pretty good job of covering some of the issues that can come up throughout their lives. But my question is, if you had to put together a checklist of what a high school student should know by the time they graduate about personal finance, what would it be? And I just want to kind of have this so that I have a better tool to use just to make sure I'm covering everything that I can in order to prepare these students for life after high school. I appreciate all your help with this, and I really enjoy the podcast. Thank you.
Greg, thank you so much for your question, and thank you for teaching your students about personal finances. Matt, we've talked about this before. Only 5 states in our great United States actually require financial education for high school students, and that's a shame because most kids walk away knowing a lot about a lot of important subjects, knowing a little about some really unimportant ones, but knowing nothing about personal finances, and that's something that affects them every single day of the rest of their lives.
Yeah, Joel, and that reminds me of this article that you actually sent me about this teacher up in Philly, and he started this entire program, not just a class, but a program where his students were able to earn money, learn how to handle their money, invest it, right? All the different things that essentially we do in the real world within the sort of program that they have there at the school. It's a fantastic article documenting that, and we'll link to that in the show notes. So, Greg, to answer your question, you know, we could give you basically a laundry list of all the different topics that we feel are crazy important. However,
and you could just read all our episode list to find out what that would be.
That's not very fun. And honestly, like the more we think about it, the more that we feel that there are a few major concepts that I think if I was a teacher teaching students, that there are a few things that would stand out that we think are crazy important, those key principles. And so that's what we're going to talk about, right? The first of those being to track your spending, right? If you are trying to do something with your money, hopefully that's spend less of it, invest more of it, you have to know where your money is currently going. You need to have eyes on it. And so the first thing you have to do is track your spending. And it sounds super boring, but it's not, right? Because think of it sort of like if you're training for something. We talked about running earlier. But if you're training for a race, you need to know how to push yourself. And you need to see where your weaknesses are so that you can make those changes. That's what a budget is. First, you track your spending. And then you start challenging yourself, right? You start setting those limits. And that's what a budget is. A lot of times, budgets can seem pretty lame and boring, but there are a lot of apps out there that once these kids start making money, and some of them might have part-time jobs now where they can start doing that. But a really tangible way to make that come alive for them is to set goals. Like, what do you want to be able to do with your money? What milestone do you want to achieve by a certain point? And that's what makes it real. That's what makes it exciting, is to know that, cool, this is what I'm working towards. I'm trying to save up enough money to buy my own vehicle, right? My own car. Or hopefully more advanced, but they're thinking, oh, I can set aside this much money and that will grow because I've got it invested. And that kind of leads us to our next important point.
Yeah, another major theme that I would want my students to learn if I was a high school teacher is to be able to grasp the concept of compounding interest. Pretty sure compounding interest has been called like the eighth wonder of the world.
If it hasn't, we're calling it now.
Boom. Trademarked. I don't know. Probably Warren Buffett or somebody smart said that. But yeah, especially for high school students, with how much time they have on their side, this concept is one that they need to grasp now. Because even just setting aside a few dollars a day from their minimum wage job or something that they might be working, that can turn into $1 million by the time they're 65. And so that is just a concept that if you can drill that home by making it simple and making it tangible and easy to understand, it's going to make a huge difference in the rest of their lives. And it's going to help them actually prioritize investing over spending because they understand how big of a deal compounding interest is. So I would definitely make that and communicating that concept well a really high priority in the class.
Yeah, Joel, and I think our third big point that we would want to see communicated to high school students has to do with credit cards. Greg, you mentioned that y'all are starting to read the Total Money Makeover book, which is Dave Ramsey's. And Dave Ramsey's a great start. He covers a lot of great concepts. He actually does a good job of covering compounding interest, so that's awesome. But we personally feel that he does a pretty poor job when it comes to talking about credit cards. We think that having credit cards and handling them responsibly is an important lesson to learn. You need to have a good credit score in order to get a mortgage. There are very few folks out there in the world who are going to save up enough money to buy a home in cash. Some people do it. It's admirable, but fact is not many folks are going to be able to do that. And so how to handle your credit cards and knowing the downsides of that, right? This is the flip side of compounding interest. You can have compounding interest work for you if you are investing that money. But if you are in debt and you're making payments, well, you've got interest working against you. And that's not the side of it that you want to be on.
Yeah. And one last thing in particular, because you're speaking to high school students, that we would recommend you discuss are the costs of college. I feel like that is something that a lot of these kids are in all likelihood going to struggle with. Going to a school that costs more than they can afford, racking up student loans, maybe even their parents racking up student loans on their behalf, and understanding the burden that can come by taking on more than you can bear. And so maybe that means looking up a bunch of different schools and what the average annual tuition is, and then what the average annual salary is for people that graduate from those schools. There are all sorts of different ways that you can help communicate this concept, maybe helping kids see that if they go to a local community college for the first 2 years of their college career, that they could potentially save tens of thousands of dollars. And it just makes their lives so much easier post-graduation if they're not saddled with massive amounts of student loans. And so on episode 70, we talked about that, but that is just such an important issue right now in our society. And so making sure that your kids understand the perils of taking out too much student loan debt is just crucial. They have to know that, and they have to know it now.
Yeah, and it's also worth mentioning that college may not be for everyone out there. I mean, we know that it may not be for everyone, but is it talked about? And the trades, right? They're making a comeback, skilled laborers. But then obviously entrepreneurship, right? If you have students who are driven enough to kind of create something that they want to do on their own terms, that can be an excellent path to pursue as well that doesn't even involve college. And Joel, one last bonus one is the stock trading game. A lot of times that's part of the curriculum when it comes to financial education in schools.
I totally did that in high school.
Yep. Yeah, I did too.
And it's fun. It feels like gambling.
Because that's basically what it is. But that's the downside of it, is that it makes students think that investing is sort of this crapshoot, that you're just gambling. It might go up, it might go down, who knows? But really, that's not what investing is all about. So I would stay away from that stock trading game altogether.
I completely agree, my friend. Okay, we got two more listener questions. And in particular, Matt, you're going to answer a question about the cost of makeup, right?
Yeah, I will, or my wife will.
Oh, yeah, let's bring her on. All right, we'll do that right after the break.
All right, Joel, we are back, and we've got a quick landlording question.
Hey guys, this is Lee in New Hampshire. Just got done listening to your episode of Listener Questions and had a couple of my own. First, what is your preferred way to receive rent? My wife and I are getting our first tenants and we're wondering what is the best method. Second, my wife and I both work full-time. She tried telling me that we shouldn't declare our income from our renters. What kind of problems are we setting ourselves up for with a decision like that? Thanks for your answers, and I'm sure I'll have more in the future.
Matt, we love talking real estate.
Yeah, and I kind of want to jump to that second part of his question, but let's just go ahead and go in order and answer his question about rents.
Okay, we'll go linearly. I still have one tenant, by the way, who refuses to pay me any other method except for a check.
Personal and, check?
Yes.
That's fine.
It's fine. It works.
Yeah.
But it's just a little more annoying because I'm so used to digital payments now.
Yeah.
I'm used to using the Cash App. I'm used to using Venmo.
Yeah, both of those are awesome. Joel, you and I both use Venmo and Cash App. They're super easy to use, really clean, really easy. I have a tenant that sometimes uses PayPal, and it can be great as well. It's easy, but it adds the additional layer of having to select pay friends and family or pay for goods and services. And originally, PayPal had set that up, I think, for online businesses like eBay specifically to add some buyer protection when it comes to paying a vendor. There's a certain amount of protection built in. They charge for that. It's like 2 or 3%. And so if you're collecting rent and your tenant doesn't pay via friends or family, you get hit with a 2 or 3% fee. And depending on what your rent is, that can be a lot of money, you know, $40-$50. And so that can be a pain. Personally, I try to avoid PayPal because of that. But I'm surprised to hear you knocking on personal checks, to be honest.
Well, I just have to like wait for it to show up in my mailbox, and then I got to take a picture of it with my phone. It's just extra steps.
Yeah, I guess I don't mind the picture. I mean, back when I had to go into the bank.
Oh, that's way worse.
Yeah, I hated it, right? I was all about digital payments. At that point, I was even really happy with PayPal. But I don't know, the mobile deposits are so easy now. Pretty much all banks have them now. I personally don't mind.
But one other service you should consider when it comes to accepting payments from your tenant is a service called Cozy. And the website is cozy.co. And it's a really good, actually kind of suite of landlord tools that you can use. Cozy doesn't charge any fees to the landlord or the tenant in order to pay rent. They also have tenant screening tools that you can use, and those do cost money. I haven't switched over to Cozy, Matt, but it's been on my radar because now I've got enough rental properties that I feel like it makes sense for me to kind of button things up a little bit more. And I feel like Cozy has this awesome suite of tools that make it free and easy for landlords.
Yeah, this is at least, I think, the second time that you've mentioned Cozy. So I think it might be time for some personal experimentation coming up here in the future, Joel.
All right, I got to make the change.
Yeah.
Now the pressure's on.
But Lee, on to the second part of your question about not declaring rental income. Don't do that. basically, that's tax fraud. At the very least, there could be fines and penalties. At worst, there could actually be jail time. It's just flat out illegal. So you want to make sure that you are in compliance with the IRS. You just want to make sure, yeah, that you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and there are actually some benefits to declaring the income that you make from your rental property. You can deduct expenses, and you can take that depreciation as well on your taxes. Major repairs and remodels that you do to the property can have big impacts on the taxes that you'll pay.
Yeah, Joel, and other big expenses as well, like, I mean, insurance, but even the small stuff, right? You know, you can track your mileage to your rental property to check up on it for showings, just different things, just even keeping an eye on it. That's not a ton, but all that little stuff adds up.
Yeah, depending on the spread between the costs associated with your rental property and the income that it's generating, you might even be able to take a loss on your taxes on your rental property, therefore benefiting you on this year's taxes. So for many reasons, you're going to want to declare your rental income. You're in for a big headache if you don't.
All right, Joel, let's go ahead now and get to our last question. This one is about makeup. This one's a little bit out of our wheelhouse.
Hi, Matt and Joel. This is Kimberly from Duval, Jacksonville, Florida. And I have a question about your wife's makeup situation. When I go to purchase makeup, just mascara alone is around $10. So I'm wondering what your wives do to cut the costs when it comes to buying makeup. You don't want to buy the cheapest thing because you don't want to break out and stuff. So thanks for everything. Bye.
So real quick, let's talk about Duval. is that how you do it?
I've never heard of it before, but I like the energy.
So I'm going to be honest. I did not know what the heck that was all about. And so I looked it up, and evidently that's what Jacksonville Jaguar fans do, either during a football game or just when they are calling into podcasts and asking a question. So
well done, Kimberly. I like it.
And like I mentioned, it's understandable, Joel, that you and I don't have much experience with saving on makeup. So it's convenient that my wife, Kate, is here at the house and she can share what she does. So Kate, thanks for dropping in.
Sure. Happy to. Hi, Kimberly. I am happy to answer your question from my perspective. It absolutely resonates me what you're asking about. I've always been shocked by how expensive makeup can be. And it's hard to know where to spend and where to save, and it's really different and personal decision for everyone. So I can talk a little bit about what I personally do to save money on makeup that works for me. First of all, I don't wear makeup often, so I'm willing to spend a little bit more on a higher quality product. It lasts forever, and really I spend very little on makeup overall, even still. Usually when I've found a product that I want to purchase, I will Google it. It leads me either to a website that's currently offering a sale on that product, or sometimes it will lead me to one of the many Instagrammers who are out there testing 100 products a day and offering suggestions or recommended duplicates or knockoff products for more expensive products. So if you purchase makeup rarely, spending a few minutes on Google can save you a lot.
So you found, Kate, that there's not necessarily a website that has all the cheap stuff that's like amazing. Right?
No, there are thousands of makeup websites where you can purchase. Okay. I do think maybe Googling the name of the website and reviews after that
sure.
is helpful, because some of these are just going to take your money or send you a product that isn't actually what you ordered. So they're constantly changing, constantly offering different kinds of sales and deals. Anything from Ulta to Macy's to Nordstrom. I would stick to something you've heard of before so that you don't end up with a fake product. But you should be able to find a sale on whatever makeup you're looking for almost all the time, especially around the holidays when they're offering gifts with purchase or they're offering buy one, get one deals on some of the bigger websites out there. That's a really easy, quick way to save a lot of money on makeup. So another thing I do to save money on makeup is stick to more affordable brands when the product that I'm looking to buy is more of a trendy product and it's less something that I'm going to wear often for an entire year. So lip color, eye color, nail color, those are usually a really good place for me to save a lot of money. I know I may not finish the whole product, and so I'm not willing to spend very much on those things. But more foundational products like BB creams and powders and lotions and stuff like that I know I'm going to finish.
Wait, what's, did you say baby cream or BB cream? What's that?
BB. So it's like a foundation mixed with usually an SPF and a lotion all together.
Oh, cool. I'm learning so much on this episode.
Another thing you mentioned in your question that I will talk about for just a minute is that more affordable makeup is not always worse for skin. I have really sensitive skin and have experienced irritation from products that do not always line up with what I spent on that product. So trial and error is super important for me when it comes to makeup, which leads me to remind everybody that you can return makeup. I like to try a product a couple times to make sure that I love it before I decide to keep it. And since it's not cheap, I do not hesitate to return it if I do not totally love it. So I'm not just packing out a drawer with a bunch of products I don't use. Everywhere I've ever purchased makeup accepts returns. I just hold on to original packaging and receipts for a couple weeks and have never had a problem.
Cool.
The final thing I do probably to save money on makeup is to remind myself to use what I already have. So anytime I am going to purchase a new product, I remind myself to go back through the makeup I already have, make sure I don't have something similar to what I'm thinking about purchasing. I have been guilty of not using makeup down to the last drop in the past and going ahead and purchasing a new product before it's really been needed. So now I challenge myself to always use it all up and look back over what I have before buying something new. So those are all the tips I have off the top of my head. Kimberly, I hope that's been helpful. I would also recommend checking out the How to Money Facebook page and continuing this conversation over there, as I feel like there are some
super savvy ladies over there, right?
Very helpful. Yeah, I've learned so much from that group. So more detailed answers probably over there if you'd like to continue the conversation.
One last question for you, Kate. Can you buy makeup on eBay? Like, I don't know. I'm not saying necessarily that it's going to be used, but I mean, you can get anything on eBay, right?
Sure. New unopened makeup on eBay from people who sell it privately or from makeup artists. There are tons of products on eBay that are legit that you can purchase at great discount. So yeah, that's a really good place to look too.
Cool. Awesome, babe. Thanks so much for coming on and sharing your makeup wisdom with us.
Sure, anytime.
All right, so I must confess, I personally don't wear makeup. I did when I was a kid when my sisters would put it on me. But since those days, just zero makeup for me. But I did find this site, and I think it might be helpful for Kimberly and for other ladies who are looking to save on makeup. It's called Brandify, Brandefy.info. And they have an app. It's iPhone only. But they compare store products to the name brand products. And they have specific Brandify reviews. And so, for instance, there's one on foundation. And they compare a $40 foundation to a $12 foundation. And the reviewer says, in my opinion, if you don't care for the sweat proof, then there's no need for the name brand. Go drugstore and get a great foundation that lasts all day for cheap. So this could be a good site for ladies to check out. It might be helpful when they're comparing like inexpensive versus really expensive makeup options. It's kind of fun to take something, Matt, that we don't know how to answer on our own and to bring your wife on. But so hopefully Kimberly in Duval got a nice little answer there.
I don't think that's how you do it either, dude.
Oh. I keep trying. Not working? All right. Well, that's all the time we've got for listener questions on this episode, Matt. It was super fun. And any other listeners who want to get in on the action in future episodes, well, they can go to our website, howtomoney.com/ask. But real quick, let's get back to the beer. We had a beer called Form to Table on the show today, and it was real nice.
Yeah, man. I really enjoyed this one. I'm not sure if you said what kind of beer this was at the beginning, but it is a rustic table beer. And I don't know if this is the proper definition of a table beer, but in my book, it's just a beer that you can have pretty much anytime with any food pairing. It doesn't have an overpowering flavor. It's something that you can enjoy pretty much whenever with whatever. And what that also means, man, is that this is a really refreshing beer. The ABV on this is only 3.5%, so it's really easy to drink, but it's still got some of those sort of funky farmhouse flavors going on, and I dig it.
Yeah, this is a style that I'm getting more and more into that I just have more of an appreciation for because it is one of those beers that's accessible but still tastes good. And so, yeah, I really enjoyed this one. And big thanks to Adam and Philly for sending this one over to us.
So, again, props to Form, and we're excited to have had this beer on the show. But, Joel, I think that's going to be it for this episode, man.
Yes, it is. But we will have links to some of those apps that we mentioned and more on the show notes for this episode at howtomoney.com.
And if you found this episode helpful, we would love to hear from you, our listeners. Just search for How to Money over at Apple Podcasts. As if you didn't know, that's what this podcast was called. But leave us a review over there. That'd be awesome. We'd love to hear from you.
All right, buddy. Until next time.
Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out, man.